God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here tonight in your first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you by first name. You're free to unmute and just say hello. First 30 days. Anybody? All righty then. BJ, would you like to read the preamble?
Yeah, I'd love to. My name is BJ. The AA alcohol problem requires desire does not ally our primary.
Thank you, BJ. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening, we are on step 12, part one. Please help me welcome our panel. I'm so excited tonight to have our dear Christy and Ralph W. Really excited for this. Love you guys. So I'm not going to read you guys to death, but I'm going to start off and we'll do this one or two paragraphs to kick it off, and then we'll throw it over to Ralph. So let me get my screen right. It's hard to make it look easy. Can you guys see that? Is that good? Okay. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So we'll start tonight on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Ralph.
Hi, my name is Ralph White and I am an alcoholic. How many minutes, David? Five?
You could take 5, 10, it doesn't matter. You talk, we're listening.
Okay, again, my name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm particularly happy to be here with you guys today. It was October 11th, 1986, that I came in out of the cold and I walked into a new way of life, you know. And so today is particularly special to me. In fact, this is the first time I'm talking since I've been 35 years sober. And I've been with you guys longer than I've been without. Last year, I had perfect symmetry. I was, you know, a couple of years ago, I was 33 years sober. I was 66 years old. Last year, I was 67 and 30. So now I've been with you 35 years and I'm 68 years old. I've been with you longer than I've been without you. And what has happened for me in that time, I don't know if we have anybody new on the platform, but I'm gonna talk as if we do. And what's happened for me in that time, I've discovered a way of living, which is not what I came here for. I came to get the gorilla off my back. And it's interesting, you know, when we read that 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And if you knew and you're sitting on the platform right now, you know, cannot promise you that you'll have a hell of a career if you try our way of life. Can't promise you the girl or the guy, the happy marriage, $1 million, a big house. Can't guarantee you any of that. But I think me and you can both guarantee you what's going to happen if you don't give us a try. You know, and what we have and what we absolutely rely on, every single one of us, as a result of practicing these principles, we get something. Talks about having had a spiritual awakening, a woke up spirit. And what do you do with a woke up spirit? Put it in the service. I heard a couple of people talking before the meeting about service. And in that first line of working with others, which is where it starts, talking about our 12 step. Now it's interesting because we work with others throughout, you know, 12 step work is a little bit different. You know, they used to say you have to give it away to keep it. I think you have to give it away to even get it. You know, there are a couple of places that talk about my very life as an ex-problem drinker depends on my constant thought of others and how I can meet your needs. You know, there's another part in Bill's story when he talks about he and I, me and my wife threw ourselves enthusiastically into working with other people. It was a design for living which worked in rough going. So there's all the way through from the time I get here. But 12-step work. This business of 12-step work is a little different. There are three parts of that. So having had the spiritual awakening, then we carry the message, and then we practice principles in all our affairs. And when Bill wrote that, when he talks about practical experience, the thing I like about our book is it's not dogma. It's not theory. You know what I mean? It's not, let's try this out and see if it works. It's based on that first sentence, practical experience. So you got these drunks, right? And in 1938, he set about writing a book. Didn't know Ralph White would be coming along these many years later, right? But they wrote this book and they put me in there. That still blows me away. And so they started writing this book. And then when they started, they were looking back at all the stuff they had tried, going in bars, preaching to people, hollering to people, trying to, you know, you need to do this, putting the finger in the face, all that. You know, it was estimated that Bill had tried to work with upwards of anywhere from 75 to 96 people before he went on that business trip to Akron, Ohio. And when he was standing in that hotel lobby in Akron, Ohio, you know, and he got thirsty. His business venture failed. And he got thirsty standing in that hotel lobby. And a thought came to him, strange thought. He said, I have been going around preaching at these drunks. I've been looking for drunks, trying to get them sober. I need to find a drunk so I stay sober. A program turned on the dot. That's where we come from. We don't work with others to get them sober. We work with others so we stay sober. And from standing in that lobby, he found out for himself the power and the value of one of us talking to another one. And I've been privileged and I've been blessed enough to discover that's still our glue. Now, I know it's probably some thumpers on here. David asked me about, he said, James discovered the Joe and Charlie tapes. And of course, if you like me, James, when you first discovered a book, it's like Columbus Day is today, right? And so everything gets discovered when I discover it. Forget the fact it was people here when he landed. That's details, you know. So when you first discover the book, all of a sudden, oh my God, this is what, can't you wait to show up at meetings, and you at the meetings and you're talking and an old timer is up there and he's not quoting the book exactly like you want him to. And of course you, what's he doing? He's killing people, right? He kept the doors open for you. And so you go through that whole deal of the newness of the deal. But it's not the information. I came here 33 years old, exactly 35 years out of desperation. But that's not what has held me these 35 years. That's not what holds me. It has not been the information. It's not been the desperation. Now it's inspiration. And what is the lead to the inspiration? It's not information, it's transformation. It's transformed. And the way we get transformed is not from just reading this book right here and not just sitting around. The way we get transformed, man, is touching people. We're a fellowship that's built on that. We're a fellowship that's built on the kindness of strangers. We don't know each other. You go into a meeting, you know, this business of 12-step work, and I like to talk about it. I know you guys, you got to forgive me for going a little bit all over. I'm usually a straight ahead thinker. But I get grateful when I think about this day in particular for me, the day grace came calling, and I didn't know it. And then somebody stuck their hand out. What it is we do, the fundamental principle of Alcoholics Anonymous, one drunk sharing with another. Why do we show that? Because practical experience, a drunk who didn't have a fellowship yet, who didn't have a sponsor, who didn't have a home group, who didn't have any of what it is we have. He didn't even have 12 steps, didn't have a big book, just a drunk with a desire to stay sober, standing in a lobby. and an idea came. I need to find a drug so I don't drink. Still fundamentally what it is we do. You know, it's our mandate, it's our mission. We do it better than anybody else. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't give referrals. You know what I'm saying? When you get here, we don't give referrals. For those who don't know, we're known by a lot of various things. And one of our monikers, we're known as the last house on the block. When you run out of everything else, because we understand. And I could talk a lot about this chapter. I'm going to yield my time because, you know, I could go on and on. But I want to hear from you, Christy. I know I didn't get into it as much as I would have liked to. But I could talk about chapter 12 a couple of hours, you guys. You know what I'm saying? Chapter 7, I mean, a couple of hours. It's but what do you do with a woke up spirit? Practical experience. Nothing. You guys, not writing a fourth step, not sharing a fifth step, not calling my sponsor on the phone, not doing nothing ensures immunity from drinking like that. The other things ensure immunity from drinking, don't get me wrong. But when all other things fail, well, find one. When your old lady leaves you or when the dude leaves you and you crawled up in a fetal position and writing just ain't touching it and calling sponsor just ain't touching it and work, call your sponsor, work with somebody. It's all over the place. You know, at our fifth, in the fourth step, but then the sex conduct inventory, if sex is particularly troublesome, work with somebody. At the end of the 10th step, you know, when it talks about, you know, watch for these things and then discuss it, ask God to remove it, you know, then turn my thoughts to somebody I could help. And just constantly, that's the antidote, you guys. For self-centered people like me. That's the antidote. Practical experience shows it. For real, I'm stopping now. Christy, just get me out of here.
Thank you, Ralph. Christy?
Oh, I was like, go ahead, Ralph. I'm really enjoying what you're talking about and how exciting that is to share on this special day. Gosh, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Christy Ellis and I'd like to wish everybody a happy Monday. Can't think of anywhere I'd rather be with you beautiful people today. And, I'm just going to introduce myself like I do anywhere I go. I'm April 12th, 1988. It's my sobriety date. I have a home group called the Awakenings Group. It's an open speaker meeting with babysitting. And I have a sponsor that I call my tour guide. And I have the joy of being a tour guide for ladies and being active in service. And thanks for asking me to participate, David. And Ralph, it's a pleasure to see you. And I've met you before at different conferences. But, you know, our paths always cross. If we're busy in AA, that's just the way this deal works. But I love, you know, you're talking about that and just, and you know, and it, the practical experience part, I always think about my sobriety is totally experiential. It's just experiences. And I talk about, you know, I like the promises that on the second paragraph, I was thinking about, you know, when I got here, because when I got here, gosh, I was a single mom with three kids, 8, 7, and 5. I had no credit because I didn't even open my bills. I had a felony hanging over my head and I had a holy resume, but I was dying of a disease called alcoholism and through a lot of things brought me to my knees. And one thing was people in my work 12-stepping me. And I didn't know this was because they were telling me about a solution and it got my interest. I wouldn't have told them that. There was a part of me that wanted to know, but I was still at that, you know, and what happened was, as a result of it, I made a phone call. I ended up going into a treatment center that they went to. But what attracted me was the light in their eyes and the way they were living. And I had gone to a couple of meetings prior just because of some things that had happened. And I remember hearing the language of the heart. I couldn't have told you that's what it was. That I just knew that people were talking about how I was feeling inside and I didn't even know them. And that got my attention quick. And that's why I'm a super big believer in identification, because if I don't hook in, the drunken me doesn't hook in with the drunken you, I'm not even gonna care about how great your life is. You know, but if you're talking about how I thought, drank, and felt, man, you got my attention. And I went to a couple of meetings before that day that on April 11th, 1988, I woke up. You know, this talks about an awakening. And Bill Wilson talks about in Language of the Heart about the greatest gift we get when we get here is the awakening. And I know that I didn't know that until I read that in Language of the Heart. And I went, oh my gosh, that's what happened to me. It's like I awoke enough to know to walk in a job and say, I'm dying. I need to take a leave of absence. I don't care if I'm losing my job. you know, I woke enough to know and that there was, it's like, I don't know. It's like, it wasn't me, because gosh knows I wouldn't have been sitting in all that stuff for all that time. And I went into treatment, and that reading goes on to say, you know, that you, well, I call it, you have to put legs on your prayers, you know, and if you don't take some action, you're not going to stay sober. And that's what he talks about in that reading, that, you know, you awaken, but yet there's some stuff you got to do. And a lot of times, sadly, people get their lives back and, you know, get the car and the apartment and the job, and all of a sudden AA becomes less important, forgetting where they got the gift. And sadly, they will, you know, go back out. And there was a story about a guy in there that did, and then he lost everything again. And once he joined back in and took the actions that we take here, his life came back together better than it ever has. And we've all seen that time and time again. And I'm just so grateful that I found y'all. I fell in love with you. I was so daggone grateful there was a way out of that hell I was living in. I was like, tell me what to do. You know, I was like, I want to feel like you. Look what I got to do. And you said, get a sponsor. And I did. You said, get a home group. And I did. And you said, and I said, get a job in that home group. And I did. And you gave me a key to the church, which blew me away, because my mama wouldn't even give me a key to her house. And I was living with them for the fourth time. And, you know, I certainly understand it now. Good for her. I was like, later, I was like, yeah, good for you, man. But point being is what I fell in love with was what those promises talk about. You know, I'm watching people be okay in their own skin. I'm watching people, you know, like laughing and coming up and saying, hey, and join in. And it was so inclusive. You know, I fell in love with, you know, the book talks about the broad, roomy, inclusive door of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so big about, you know, I just want everyone to feel like they can come in, you know, and the door is big, you know, and people were just so welcoming and loving and kind. And I learned about looking people in the eye and saying hello and remembering their names, because God knows I hated myself when I got here. And that sure did help me. And those things in my early sobriety, I've been able to, you know, because of wonderful people, tour guides that took my hand and said, come on. And hey, we're going to do this. Come on. And hey, we're doing that. Come on. And I did. And they would say, I cannot wait to watch this fellowship grow up around you. And I'd be like, what? You know, and of course, you know, when we get to step 12 and my sponsor, I asked her about it. She showed me. And the great thing is, you know, the loneliness that I felt even when I was in a room full of people, you know, did go away. You know, all this stuff did, you know, but I could not have the awakening at the 12th step if I hadn't worked the other 11. You know, the transformation Ralph talked about, you know, that psychic change, that learning about the truth of my condition. What is alcoholism? What is it? You know, arming myself with facts about myself so I actually share it with somebody, you know, the way people shared it with me. You know, going from hopeless to hopeful. How do I do that? How do I talk about that? You know, how do I show that? And I learned that the loudest noise we make are our actions, you know, that it's not about what I say, because God knows I was a great talker before I got here, but nobody's really listening, I found out later. But I, you know, it's what am I doing? It's all about what I do, man. It's just totally about what I do. And so just to have that joy, you know, new meaning in life. Oh my God, that blew me away. When I read that, I was like, oh my gosh. And the truth of the matter is, there was new meaning. I wanted to live. That was a big deal, because I was dying and I hated myself and I love my kids, but I thought I was going to have to drink the rest of my life or die until I got to you. You know, and I was 30 when I turned 31 in treatment. And I just, you know, I remember them telling us 1 out of 10 of y'all will make it. And I'd be like, well, I'll be seeing y'all later, man, because I'm making it. I got a chance. I am going to do whatever I got to do. And so I hit the ground running. And I believed you and I followed you and fell in love with you. And if you said something was going on, I went and I took my kids with me and they sat in the room and colored while I went to meetings. I mean, I did whatever I had to do. And this stuff did happen for me. You know, I did have, you know, fellowship grew up around me and I've got amazing friends and I started going in the jails at 9 months sober. And I still do that now. And I mean, all this stuff happened for me because I wanted to live and I was willing to do whatever I had to do to stay sober. And I knew that my life depended on it. And I know today my life still depends on it. So, you know, I put those chairs up and open my home group and greet and all that today, because it puts that stuff between me and that door, man. Plus people are watching. And so what's happened through the years, I've had the sincere privilege of having people. And I'm going to tell you, it humbles me every time somebody asks me, will you help me? Or how did you do that? It's so humbling. It's like, it just moves me. I'm like, wow, you know, and I just, you know, simply tell them, and we're going to talk more about it. I know in some of the chapters that are coming up, but, you know, and it, but it just stresses frequent contact with newcomers. You know, I'm as busy as I was when I got here, probably busy, but I took that thing of, I want more, and made it to an asset. I just want it. You know, I want to be involved. And here's the thing. And then I'll stop. It's so funny because it's a lot of misconception about being busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, I got a full busy AA life, but I also have grandkids and a husband and a good marriage and children and dogs and work in the yard and go on vacation and do all this stuff. I have a life. God makes time, man, when you're doing this, his work and helping his kids. That's just the way it is for me. Because people have this assumption. They're like, is that all you do? I'm like, good Lord, no. That's not what I do. I've been blessed with an amazing life. The book says, the promise, you know, it's a promise. You can have life second to none. And I got one, you know, and I know why. And it's because I'm willing that I do stick my hand out. And I believe in the responsibility pledge. And when I give somebody my number, I answer the phone. I learned those things young in sobriety. You know, you give somebody a number, you be prepared to call back or answer that phone. You be prepared to do it. Don't give it if you're not. I tell my people that. Don't give them your number if you're not going to do it. You know, and just being a link in the chain. But I know we got lots more to talk about. And so grateful we get to celebrate your anniversary. Thank you.
I know. That's wonderful. Thank you, Chrissy. Thank you both. I think I'm going to do two paragraphs. Don't worry about sticking with the program. You guys want to come from inspiration, you go for it. But I'll go ahead and read two paragraphs and then we'll kick it over to Chrissy and let you kick it back to Ralph. So we're going to resume on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak for himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up until the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him some humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. Continuing on page 91, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Christy?
I was thinking about different people that through the years that I've had the opportunity to sit with or cross paths with and talk about it. And what I love about it is just, I mean, these clear cut and, you know, directions on how to do it. Because sometimes I know in earlier sobriety, if I was going to do, you know, the rare 12 step call, you know, we don't hear about them as much, but just even somebody calling saying, hey, will you talk to my sister or my this or my that, and call and talking to them, you know, it just gives you such great, and, you know, like a little roadmap of how to do it. And the thing is, I believe if I'm really sincerely talking about myself, it's sincere, you know, and what I love about it is I'm just talking about me in a way where, you know, and being able to describe hopelessness. I remember one time I was at work and this friend of mine, he called and he said, Chrissy, I got this girl that needs to talk to somebody. She's really struggling and she lives way, way, way out in the boondocks. There's nobody around. And I said, okay, you know, get her to call me. And give me her number too, in case I don't hear from her. And I talked to her. And what was so beautiful about it, and that's why I just love the simplicity of what it really is simple. I can get off in my head and start thinking, and I need to make sure I need to say it really profound, and I got to know this, and I got to know that, and I got to be this. And I don't. I need to keep it super simple. And I called her and I talked to her and just talked about the hopelessness that I felt when I, you know, before I got here. And she hooked right into that. And all of a sudden she started talking about hers. And that was just such a powerful experience for me, because we were both like crying on the phone, connecting as two drunks. She was way far away, but at that moment we were real close to each other. And it was through the phone. So the language of the heart, through the screen, through the phone, face to face, that stuff's powerful. And but what this says to me, I'm a believer just meeting people where they are. I had a girl that drank with, bless her heart, she wanted to be sober, but she kept coming. She was a coffee maker for her home group. She got mad because they said they didn't want her to set it up anymore because she smelled like alcohol. Somebody walks up that's new and they're smelling alcohol, because some people are coming to find out how to drink safely. We know that. And she got so upset. And then people would say, I can't believe she's here smelling like alcohol. I'm like, where else is she supposed to go? You know, this is the good news, is that we just open our arms and we say, just keep coming, keep coming. You know, she's not doing anything wrong. She wants to be sober. I think it takes a lot of guts to come in an AA meeting and you've been drinking and you're not like rowdy or anything, but what this speaks to me is just about me sharing me with someone, me talking about the truth of my condition. And I wouldn't have that if I had not gone to, there's no way. I mean, the fourth step for me, I came face to face with myself for the first time ever. I wrote down stuff about, I pretended some other girl did, you know, I was like, you know, because I would like so good at just pretending I didn't do half stuff I did, but being able to embrace who I was, see the patterns of behavior, to see my motives and relationships, to see how I tick, to see another level of my alcoholism, all that prepared me to give me the ability to sit down with someone and put it into simplistic words about the nature of my disease and how I thought and how I drank and how I felt. Whether our other stuff was different, it didn't matter, because that's what I heard when I heard you were talking about the inside stuff, what it did to you. Why can't I stop? What does losing the power of choice mean? You know, how come I every day I'm saying I'm going to quit and I don't. And by noon I'm saying, nope, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Nope, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Nope, I'm going to do it tomorrow. Those inconsistencies, making deals. And finally, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, this 3 years later, I'm still doing this. Nothing's changing. And I don't know what to do. Sharing that with them. And I know I related to that. When people said that, I went, man, yes. And that was that language of the heart that I heard, you know, people describing how I was feeling inside, thinking I'm the only one. How come when I take one, I want a bunch? And I'm thirsty and I can't quench my thirst. What's going on? What does that mean? You know, and just those kind of simple things. And when I really look back, I started drinking like that when I was a teenager. I was a blackout drinker. You know, I've talked to people about that stuff, you know, and I thought blacking out was kind of part of what you did when you got drunk. I mean, I purposely went out to get drunk when I was a teenager. We'd be like, we're going out and party tonight, man. I mean, it was peace, love, Dove, early 70s. You know, I was like loving the music and all the other stuff that went with it and the clothes and the guys. Unfortunately, I thought the boys and the booze were the solution for many years. And it just, you know, all that stuff. But it was the feeling of, you know, alcoholism is such a separator. You know, I always felt very disconnected from you, me, and God. I always felt this disconnect. And so when I drank, you know, it helped with that. So I would drink because I wanted to feel comfortable in my own skin. I could make you think I'm cool and comfortable. I always had this ability of looking like I was okay. But man, inside I was screaming, you know, and I drank a lot before I went places, and I made a fool of myself a lot, and I blacked out a lot, and a lot of stuff happened to me that I will never know to this day, and I'm okay with it. Sometimes people wanted to tell you, and those, you know, you try to avoid them people. But my point being is, those are the things that I share, because, and it's so funny when, you know, we share stories, like I do book studies with my girls, been doing them for years. We meet and sometimes I think people, when you've been sober a good while, they forget that you did stuff. And they'll act like, and I'll be like, do I need to tell y'all some stories and remind you that I'm like here because I need to be sober, you know? but you know, I see that it's hysterical. It's so funny, but those are the things that I share and to watch when you're sitting across from one and you're just, and they're just, they just can't get it together or figure out. And you're describing that and to watch their face where they're like that identification. Just by sharing the deepest parts. And I'll tell you the truth, if I hadn't worked the steps, there's no way I could have put them into words too. A fifth step for me gave me the ability to share at a level I'd never shared with any individuals in my entire life. It helped me to become, you know, because I want to be the authentic me. I used to want to be somebody else, want to do this, do that. I want to be the person God created, one of God's kids, helping God's kids, plain and simple. And so, but that, I'm telling you, that really, I never knew that, but I realized that sometime, you know, as years were going, that gave me the ability to be transparent. And that gave me the ability to share at that level and put it into words that we could grab. And yet that, I'm so grateful for that, you know. And lastly, I'll say, you know, when I got here, I had so many loose ends and these are things I share with them too. The loose ends are people I didn't call back, bills I didn't pay, anything I didn't do I was supposed to do. So when I got to you, I was eating alive from the inside out, like piranha with loose ends. And for me, steps 4 through 9 tied those up so that I could live in today and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, using 10, 11, and 12, especially 12, taking it home, sharing it with, watching my kids today are grown. I mean, they're big. They were 8, 7, and 5. And I hear them using their stuff because you said, take, you know, and it's an attraction. I'm not saying you need to do blah, blah, blah. They just watched. People watch, you know, and it's just, it's a beautiful thing. So anyway, it's enough out of me. Thanks.
Thank you, Christy. Ralph?
Oh, thank you, Christy. I remember sitting in meetings, and it seems as if it's much more commonplace now to sit in a meeting and see people with 30 years or something. And in 86, when I came, of course, Alcoholics Anonymous was, you know, 50 years old. So it wasn't as common. And I'd see a guy and I'd wonder, why do you still have to come to meetings? I wonder if he still thinks about getting loaded. I wonder what is it, you know, and if I were talking to my young self now, you know, what is it that Christy talked about, steps 4 through 9, and see what we have, our pivot step is the step 3, you know, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to this power because it's too much me between me and the power. Relieve me of the bondage of self, whole deal. That's where everything else starts. This relieve me of the bondage of self. And so I go through this ego reducing process, which is how I get relieved. That's the bondage of self. It's too much, Ralph. I was with a sponsee one morning and we were at breakfast and she was saying, Sponsee, I want to go through these steps because I just think there's so much more to me. I was like, no, baby, we need much less of you. There's too much. So spiritual life, you guys, is always about the terms we use in spiritual life are different than material. And material is bigger, better, more, bigger bank account, more zeros. But spiritual life, the words that we see in the book are always about ridding, abandoning, you know, it's always about less of. So when I do this thing, you would think, so now I've done this 4 through 9, ego reduced, just reduced. And so now I get to 12, psh, I got this, I'm running this. I just find it so interesting that if I stay in this process, there are some default settings that do for me what I can't do for myself. We call it training your feet. You don't know that's what you're doing at the time, but we call it training your feet. And when you think about sitting with a man and seeing him alone if possible, because Christy was sharing about sometimes sponsees don't forget, wait a minute. you must not know who I am. I need to tell you some stories. Sometimes I don't know who I am because I've been doing this long enough, you guys. It sounds like a story I'm telling sometimes. Every now and then when I'm telling my story, I feel it. But most of the time, it's a narrative that I'm saying. I told this to Don P. many years ago. I said, Don, it feels like when I'm sharing, it's a story about somebody else. And Don Prince said, Ralph, that's because it is about somebody. That guy died. Now, he can be resurrected. You rest on your laurels. He can come. But that guy died. So it is that. So what is it that happens? There's something that's strange and wonderful and humbling and feet to the pavement about sharing with another. There's something that happens that does it for me when I can't do it for, because I don't always remember. I had a guy call me the other day, and it was his third call. I haven't met him yet. I know his mom, and I really knew his dad, his granddad. His granddad was one of our guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, and his mom's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she gave him my number, and he called me. He called me 3 weeks ago, tore up, talking about going in a place, but going vacillating back and forth about, oh, I don't, okay, if your program is working, keep working your program. Called me 2 weeks later. Now he's ready to go in a place, but he's got a lot of reasons why this ain't the right place to go into, okay? If that ain't, called me last week, this time, I'm standing at the door going, call me when you get in there. I don't know if he has yet, but I stood in front of myself in stark relief. He stood in front of me, you know. This, I don't always know it, you guys, but sometimes the practice of these principles will do something for me I can't do for myself. Christy, I love what you was talking about, because God will do what he does. If you're in, I'm not here because of the big book. I'm not here even because of the 12. You know, the book is a map. It's not the treasure. I'm here because of God's grace. That's why I'm here 35 years. God's grace. But I can't access it. I can't create it. I don't produce it. I can't control it. But I can taste it. And most of the time, I access it by these ego-reducing series of things you guys gave me to do to get out the way. Because grace is there. The channel is blocked. Grace is always coming. It ain't, grace ain't never been withheld. God do one thing. He just keep God. He don't do anything else. He just keeps sending. But the receiver. So my job is to wipe the, and I've been smudging the window 4 and 5, 6 and 7, 8 and 9, 10, and finish 8 and 9. Oh, I got this. I'm grown. You know, I'm living in the realm of the spirit now. I'm you know, but I'm still me. Default, but I'm still human. You know, we don't rise above that state, you guys. And what happens in this 12th step, you know, we get the opportunity. We get the opportunity to revisit. I call it working with others. I say you get the opportunity. I call it remap your own spiritual DNA. Your own spiritual DNA. You have a chance. Because I have my own experiences, right? I can learn, I can have them, I can learn from them, I get stuff, God does what he does. I love when Chrissy talked, I started having stuff, I got a good job, I got a career, you know, I went 18 months without a job, and so I was going to 3 meetings a day. I seemed busier, but I understand, Chrissy, when you say I'm as busy now as ever before, but I'm not as many meetings as I was earlier. Because I too got kids, I got grandkids, I got career, I got stuff going on that's outside. But I was in a lot of activity early as opposed to action. I was in a lot of the activity of alcoholism, and I needed to be. You know, I'm one of the ones, if we got anybody on the platform that's been struggling, that's been coming in and out, that feels as if Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't work for me. Because I know all the names, and I know it's like going to the gym, and I have a gym membership, and I know the names of everybody in there. And I see David, and I see James, and I see him on the machines, and I give them a towel, and I tell them, give me one more set. And after 30 days or 60 days, they leave the gym, and they're getting in shape. I'm getting more and more resentful, you know, because they leave, and they're in shape. You know, I know everybody. I got a membership. I ain't picked up a weight. I ain't laid on a bench. I have not done a pull-up, a sit-up, but I got a gym membership and I show up at the gym. And so then I leave in 90 days fatter than when I came, and I say the gym doesn't work, you know. But having a membership at the gym does not, you know, I have not put in the work, You know, so being on the team ain't the same as being on the team is our third tradition. The only requirement for membership is the desire that puts me on the team. I got a desire to stop drinking. But everybody that's on the team ain't in the game. Put me in the game. Put me in the game. I enter the game in that third step, but I stay in the game really for real, you know, with this business of working with others and staying in the lane. See, a lot of times, you know, I get in the book and I'm a thumper now, and I don't want to do what it is. This is the default. You guys, this is why I tell my story. Ain't nobody interested in, if you don't know where I come from, you ain't interested in where I am now. As far as you know, I always wore suits. As far as you know, my hair was always combed. As far as you know, my eyes were always clear. As far as you know, I was always making sense with my sentences, as far as you know, until I get in front of you. And it says, let you see your man alone if possible. You know, so, and I'm bouncing, but Christy said a couple of things that just resonated with me. She talked about getting stuff and that stuff becoming important. Don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. Say that again, because God, some people are going to get some stuff coming back real fast. And then I can't go to meetings. I got to get this money. I can't go to meetings. I got to chase her. I can't go to meetings. We're binge watching Ozark tonight. Don't let the life that AA gave you get in the way of your AA life. Conversely, there'll be some bumps in the road. There'll be some hits that some people take. When it gets rough, lean in. That's why it's good to be anchored early. As I was saying before to some people who might have thought they tried AA and found us wanting. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. Do what we do. Come all the way in, sit all the way down, and do what we do. This business of talking and seeing your man alone if possible, because I've done a 12-step. A lot of times, we don't pay a lot of attention to this chapter, because a lot of times we get people now that's green, and they go through treatment centers, and they come in. They've already been ushered into Alcoholics Anonymous, or we get them on. But sometimes I need to be ready. I need to be ready because I might get a true. And this has application anyway for people inside of the rooms, you know. But so see him alone if possible. I was talking to a guy one time and he thought I was a secret agent for his wife. She put you up to this. You don't. No, baby. I don't need an introduction. Just let him know. Me and him will talk, you know. So there are practical reasons, you guys, for what this is saying. And then, test the temperature. Test the temperature. Don't go in leading like I lead. I'm Mr. AA. I know what it is. You need to listen to me. No. Test the temperature. Somebody to run his mouth a lot like me, dude, you probably need to chill. But if it's somebody that's really reserved, you know, scared, don't want to talk, encourage them to talk. Somebody that's overly serious, tell them, make it light, make it laugh. Somebody that's been here and think they know more than you know, okay, listen to them, hit them with that last thing. Okay, I got it. You know more than me. You know more than me about philosophy. You know more than me about religion. You know more than me about the, how's that working for you? You still drinking? That's the one that said, you know. And so, but this deal, I was thinking about it, you guys. That business of when he finds out that you know all about the drinking game, how's he gonna know that? I gotta talk in his language. Don't come in here quoting book and no. And what's interesting about that, it keeps me grounded. It keeps me eye to eye. We don't have doctors. I mean, there are doctors in Alcoholics Anonymous, but when they're talking with others, they're not talking as a doctor. They're talking as a member. You know, sometimes I get confused. You know, I got a little more time than somebody. I think sponsor makes me a doctor. You know, somebody has to remind me, dude, you sitting in here in an ass out gown just like me. You know, don't think that's a doctor smock. That's an ass out gown. And every now and then somebody will let you know, no, dude, Emperor ain't got no clothes. You in Ethiopian, it's showing just, you know. And so that's, man, that 12 step when it talks about that. So when you let him know you know all about the drinking game, he will match, then start telling stories. You know, one of the best places to get ready for that, you guys, which is why I need to go through the book. When we read chapter 3 and the guys talk about Jim and the guys talk about how they called on Fred, you know, those are textbook 12-step calls about the guys came in, they grinned. Fred didn't like that. You're grinning about, you know, keep it light. keep it easy. I'm not the guy. I'm not the finger in your face kind of guy. It's the, you know, I don't like it, so I don't use it, you know. And but the business of so it says, if you satisfied he's a real alcoholic, how would I know that? How would I be satisfied that he's a real alcoholic? Well, there are some things that seem paradoxical in AA. They seem inconsistent because we don't brand another person as alcoholic. That's true. I'm not going to tell you, David, you're an alcoholic. But in my mind, if I'm satisfied that he is, why would I be satisfied that he is? Because I know the doctor's opinion. I've gone through stuff. I happen to know the features that make an alcoholic. I happen to know that if you've ever experienced the phenomena of craving, how am I going to know that? Me and him talking. Dude, have you ever spent more than you intended to spend, stayed longer than you intended to stay, done things you didn't intend to do? Have you done it more than once? You know, if you've experienced the phenomena of craving, and if you drank when you said you ain't going to again, that's the two question test. They got the 20 and the 40, but it's real simple. You know, so it's some stuff I need to know. Not clinical. And here's the good news, you guys. This is how the power. I came at 33. Now I've had stuff. You know, I had a career. I consider myself extremely blessed and fortunate. I got it's four of us in the program. I had three brothers in the program, and my other two brothers were stair steps right under me, and I'm impressed. You know, Ronnie's 35 years sober too, Reggie's four. And my baby brother, Rod, is the most impressive. He's the most impressive. Me and Ronnie were school boys, always high achievers. Rod was hustler. Rod was trying to be, and God did something with him. Same thing he did with the school boy. He did something with him. Equipped him with the same thing he equipped the school boy. So if you the guy or if you the lady that's always been told I'm on the margin, that's always been told I'm on the fringes, that's always been told that you ain't shit, that's always, I've always told yourself, I don't have nothing to offer. You listen to Christy and you listen to Ralph and you say, I can't do it. Yeah, listen to them. They well-spoken. They've been doing this a long time. This deal right here, this spiritual life, what we bring to the table that makes us the most useful. You know, grace don't need an invitation. It just need an opening. All you got to do is be broken. Isn't that wonderful? Because that's why all of us are here. We broke open and we share the broken stuff. That's what we share. Your experience. That's what makes me valuable. That's what makes me useful. That's the good news. You ain't got to be deep. You ain't got to be heavy. You ain't got to be profound. You ain't got to, you know, have all the work. You ain't got to have all that. Just got to be broken and got to be willing, you know, and got to be surrendered. And the thing about that one, too, is surrender comes in spite of you. It don't come because of you. Surrender is not something that's, well, you know, surrender came calling. And I didn't know that how dark it is before the dawn day was October the 10th, 86. I didn't make a reservation for Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of us don't get here off a reservation. Looking in the rearview mirror, I don't know what was happening, what was different on October the 11th. But I believe when desperation meets opportunity, a small window of grace opens up. I jumped through the window that morning, and I've been with you ever since. And I like to talk, you know, and that's the beauty of the 12 step. What was my biggest, what I thought was the worst thing that ever happened in my life has made me more effective and more useful than anything else. Wow, what a gift, what a gift. I guess I'm going to talk another 2 or 3 minutes because I guess we're not going to read anymore, right, David? So I'll talk another 2 or 3 minutes and then I'll give it to Christy and we can get up out of here. You know, I didn't know what I was walking into when I came in. And I didn't know I walked into a life of usefulness and a life of value. And that's the highest thing we get in Alcoholics Anonymous is useful. You know, my spiritual life kind of mirrors my prayer life. You know, first phase one is help me. Almost all of us get here on that phase. Phase two, give me, grant me strength as I go from here. Grant me the serenity, you know, give me. Third phase, grow me. Fourth phase, use me, highest phase, highest call, use me. And I get the opportunity. I was sharing before about remapping DNA, nothing like sponsorship. Being sponsored and having a sponsor. Having a sponsor and being sponsored are two different things. I have a sponsor. He's Bob B. out of St. Paul, Minnesota. And he knows he's my sponsor. And hear from him. And then I get the biggest privilege there is. I get the privilege to sponsor him. Don't be scared of that if you haven't done that before. It's like parenting. I ain't ready to be a parent. Well, if she's pregnant or if you're pregnant, get ready. And then, you know, and sponsees are like, baby, it's hard to kill them. Don't trip off that. It's hard to kill them. Just, you know, if you leave me, I can't speak for anybody else because there are different ways of sponsoring. Some people sponsor clinically. I'm a hands-on. I leave with my heart. You know, I'm not just a clinical. I'm going to take you through this. I know I'm at the baby showers and I'm at the weddings and I'm at the birthday parties. And some people feel like they cannot be objective and effective if they get too close. I can put my foot in your ass and I can be your cheerleader. I'm a cheerleader. I cheer for you. I'm on your team. I'm built that way. And you got to, you know, inside your sponsorship. And I'm going to say this again. The thing about sponsorship, you guys, it's never just a duet. It seems like it's just two people. But I guarantee you, if you lead with your heart, there's always another entity in it. Have you ever heard yourself when you sponsor? Have you ever heard something come out of your mouth that you didn't know was in your mouth till it came out? That's because when two or more of us get together, he's there. He's there. The greatest experience and the biggest thing that I've been given, you know, a guy that came in at 33 years old, broken and given up on life. Here I sit 35 years later. You know, and I'm in California right now. I'm in Los Angeles, but I live in the state of grace as a result of you guys. My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Ralph. Christy, you want to do a minute, 90 seconds, 120?
I've thoroughly enjoyed myself. What a great way to, I've always loved being with you and all you beautiful people. One thing I wanted to, you know, say is, I mean, ditto on everything Ralph said, and thank you so much for just beautiful, heartfelt share. And I remember our girl, I'm really big about leaving the door open and working with others talks about that, people knowing they can call no matter what. You know, you don't want to spoil a future time. I had a girl call me recently that I sponsored 20 plus years ago, and she was in trouble and she knew she could call. And that's the person I want to be, is it someone they know they can call. And I had another girl I sponsored that would call drunk all the time. And every time she'd call, I'd say, when you want to stay sober, when you want to drink, give me a call. And I'd tell her that every time consistently. And about 30 days went by. At some point, she called me. She said, Christy, I'm 30 days sober. Will you sponsor me? And she's still sponsored. She's still sober today. And just my point being with that is you just don't know if people are going to get it, you know, and I just want to be that person that, the door's open, the phone's there. When you're ready, man, my hand's out, ready to grab yours. Anyway, y'all take care. Be the light, be the good, make every day amazing.
Thank you all so much. Just amazing. Wish we had 2 hours. let's do some business here. Everybody will get a chance to unmute and thank Christy and Ralph. Happy anniversary, Ralph. Thank you for spending it with us. Let's see, I'm going to share my screen and let's see, I didn't figure out how to do this. The seventh tradition states that every group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I put some links in the chat. We also have a Venmo account at Simple Actions or PayPal, and the QR codes are there. But what I didn't figure on is I can't actually read the seventh tradition while those are on the screen. So. That's the first time that happened. Let's see. The seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? You have the ability to unmute. All right. We got two great speakers coming next week. And the week after that, we've got John P. from Richmond, Virginia. He's going to come tell his story at our supper and a speaker. We'll look forward to that. And then what are we at 10, 11 on the fourth Wednesday of the month, we've got a concepts workshop. We've got Chris W is going to come in and do concept 10. And that is available at the tidewaterinnergroup.org. That is there. So Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here after we close the meeting. Also, I have opened the chat up. So if you're shy, feel free to send a message to anybody in the meeting. So in closing, I'd like to, again, can we thank our wonderful panel? Thank everybody who participated. And if Debbie D would be so kind as to read the last technically three paragraphs on page 164.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
A vision for you, page 164 of the big book. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie. Thank everybody. And if we'll just virtually circle up and virtually hold hands, feel free to unmute and we can have a noisy, confusing version of the Lord's Prayer. Whose Father? Our Father.
Our Father.
Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, in the glory of God forever. Amen. Woohoo!